This episode of the We Are Birmingham podcast is sponsored by footygreets.com.
Hi, it's Paul Devlin here.
Hiya, Jeff Horsfield here.
This is Neil Danz.
Rowan Vine here.
Birthday, wedding, anniversary, or any occasion. Personalised video messages from your favourite footballers. footygreets.com.
Hello and welcome to the We Are Birmingham podcast. I'm Chris Golding.
I'm Matthew Elliott.
Happy New Year, everybody. Happy New Year, Matthew.
Happy New Year. Do we still say that on the 13th of January?
It's the first time that we've done a podcast since the New Year.
Yeah, so, I think I wished you Happy New Year on the 1st of January.
Yeah, to me, but yeah. this is public facing. So, Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone, even though it is the 13th. Let's hope we're in for some joy in 2021. Probably asking too much.
Did you have a nice Christmas and isolated New Year?
Yeah, I did. I think, I don't know if I mentioned this last time on the podcast, but the fact that we didn't have to go around doing your family box ticking of going to see people all around Christmas, there was no pressure on me or anyone in the family to go around and see everybody. So it was kind of nice just to have quite a relaxing one, which I really enjoyed. Obviously, I've not been back to England, so I haven't seen my immediate family in terms of my mum and my dad and my sister and stuff like that. But, you know, video calls and whatnot, I've just had to make do with that. But it was good. What about you?
Didn't feel very Christmassy. I think we spent Christmas Day with my mum and my sister after dad passing away last year. It was an unusual one. It was a strange one. I think everyone was probably on a little bit on edge and sort of not wanting to. You wanted to enjoy the day rather than sort of getting upset and dragging it down a bit, I suppose. But it was a bit of a strange one. My sister insisted on having all the windows open because Boris had said that the windows should be open. So it was quite chilly. At one point, I think
did I miss that? I must have missed that one about the windows being open.
They said about letting fresh air in and circulating through the house, so they had the windows open, and it was very chilly.
Yeah,
it was better than it could have been, because at one point she was on about sitting outside around a chimney, so it could have been even worse. Nice idea, but maybe not when it's -5 or something.
Yeah, maybe not ideal.
It was a different Christmas. To me, it probably didn't feel really like Christmas, but it was what it was. We're all going through it, aren't we? So hopefully this year, things will be normal, more normal.
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like anything's getting back to normality, does it?
Not yet. Let's roll these vaccines out and then we'll see where we are.
Yeah, I am all ready for the kids to go. I'm ready already for the kids to go back to school. They're driving me around the bend, and I've only been back at work a week and a bit. Absolutely mental in here.
Should probably say, shouldn't we, that if you hear the kids screaming in the background, then it's because they're...
It's almost definitely going to happen at some point, so I apologise. Yeah. But listeners probably should be used to it occasionally happening anyway by now, I think. So.
I had an ice cream van over there, though.
No, yeah. To be fair, it does come around here, but it goes round the back. Sometimes you hear it, sometimes you won't. But it is still coming out in January, much like the other one used to do. In the coldest of weather, there are still people buying ice creams.
What, people like ice cream, mate?
There is literally one person on the street that goes out and buys an ice cream every time it comes round. And
if one person from every street buys an ice cream.
He's got a lot of streets to get around to make a profit, I think. I'm not going to lie. Especially in the winter.
Depends how long the streets are as well.
It's just a middle-aged man that goes out and gets his ice cream every time it comes out, every day.
So you just buy a feast as well? It's not even an ice cream.
No, it's a proper ice cream.
99.
Mr. Whippy type 99 type thing, and every time with all the toppings.
Oh, mate, on this diet, and we're talking about Mr. Whippy ice creams. I'm like, whoa, I could have one of them.
You can factor that stuff in. You just have to be smarter about the rest of what you eat during the day.
We'll do it. We'll sort it. Right, should we get on to more pressing subjects? How shit we were over the Christmas
pressing
period.
Or depressing subjects.
Both.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was pretty exciting, wasn't it? 4-0 against Derby and 2-0 against Blackburn. That's 6 goals against, no goals.
Over the period, obviously there was Man City tacked on to the end of that. But I think over the period, they were the two more disappointing, and just
don't count the Man City games. Those two were just, and I was kind of, and I think we spoke about it beforehand, that when I was kind of like moderately positive about the Derby game, and yeah, that didn't turn out very well, did it?
No, I went 3-0.
It also proved that George Friend is not the Messiah, though, which, you know, I felt a little bit better about. But.
Yeah, it's. Neither of them were inspiring, but inspiring. I mean, the Derby game was just a collapse, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
Very little positive about either games. We were just very. I've seen a lot of people refer to it as we're very meh going forward, and where we were, you know, looked fairly solid at the back earlier in the season.
That's regressive.
You can get away with being meh going forward, but you can't if you're conceding 4 goals, 2 goals. And, you know, I don't want to get frustrated at the manager, but, you know, the chopping and changing has got to stop. He's got to settle down with something that looks like his best 11. His subs have got to improve. We just need something a little bit more solid. And if that means going back to a more defensive, you know, style of play, you know, I'm happy to see us grind those results out. I can deal with the turgid, boring football if we're grinding results out. At the moment, we just look so disjointed and so unorganised.
We don't look good going forward, and we don't look good at the back.
We're trying to play more attacking football, but it just looks bad. And I don't count the Man City game, really, because, you know, it was always going to be, I mean, we'd lost that game at 7:20 on the middle end of November when they made that draw. Yeah. I mean, we may as well just not turned up. And we would have lost 3-0 if that had been the case as well. So, you know, but that was probably our best performance over those few games, I think. I know that Man City, you know, absolutely dominated that first half.
I was going to say the second half, maybe. And I think that there's probably an element of them taking the foot off the gas. No, probably not risking any silly injuries. I mean, at one point there was Mark Roberts outpacing... what's his name?
Phil Foden.
Phil Foden, that's it.
And
everyone's sort of raving about it. Now, yeah, fair play, Roberts has done him for pace, but I'm not sure that Foden was ever really fully committed to chasing.
Roberts is quicker than people give him credit
for, though, as well.
It's his gangly legs.
Usain Bolt. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. We've seen him get beaten for pace by people before, but you just have to question how into the game at that point were Man City, a 3-0 lead, and it's a training session for them. Don't pick up any silly injuries. But then we still went out and we actually started putting some football together at times.
The second half we did was a few head scratching subs again, but and yes, you're right, it could well be because Man City took their foot off the gas, but you know, we did look a lot more positive going forward. We did have a nice few sort of spells where we tried to pass it around, and Lico looked fairly dangerous, and Bella looked really, really good when he came on. He seemed to raise his game. Roberts actually looked fairly solid. I quite liked that sort of 5-4-1 that we kind of set up as. I'm not sure about even Sunjic as a winger, but obviously Bella came on for him.
Gardner can come in when he's there.
We can, he can, yeah. Winger extraordinaire. But, you know, and I didn't mind that. I thought we looked not too bad. Clayton, you know, we've both sort of said how we feel about him, but he actually looked like he was trying to sort of just piece things together and, you know, just retain possession of the ball. And I think he seemed to do that fairly nicely. There was positive signs, despite the fact that, you know, Man City probably did just start easing up a bit. To be fair, Man City had one very good chance. It was a bit of a goal mouth scramble, and obviously Mahrez had a goal ruled out. So they weren't completely taking their foot off the gas. They were still able to try and open this up. And
that probably pays testament to how good they are, though. When you can play at half of your quality and still look good against the team. And to me, I think that's, it shows for Pep, maybe the way that he's training, drilling things in, and they're just a class above. But there's there's nothing negative to really be taken from that, because a lot of teams in the Premier League struggle to play against them. So, I mean, with Blues and on a budget now,
I've seen them when they play people like Newcastle and Burnley and, you know, teams like that, no disrespect, but it has a very, very similar outcome to that. I mean, there's a lot of Man City having the ball and the opposition sitting back. Even they played Chelsea a few weeks ago, and that in some spells that was very, very similar against us. And Chelsea are, technically class Chelsea as a top four, top five Premier League team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I think there were positives to come out of that, despite the fact, you know, as you say, that Man City may not have been trying as hard in the second half, but there was, I think, the majority of the players put in a pretty good showing, and you know, I think they can take the positives into Middlesbrough, is it? Yeah, which we'll get onto later. I think it's Middlesbrough and Preston, isn't it? We've got two games there, so yeah. Providing the country hasn't gone down with COVID by that point. But yeah, the other two games is just defensive mistakes, goalkeeper mistakes, very much the story of the last few weeks since Craig Gardner left.
He's back.
But now he's back. The real Messiah, everybody.
Yeah.
The official website would have you believe he's the real Messiah.
And he's been gone for ages as well. If you read that article, it's almost like that he'd gone years ago and he was coming back.
Yeah, was it? Having previously worked with Karanka at Blues, the pair share a fantastic working relationship. It's basically like he was loaned to Sheffield Wednesday for 2 months, and then they said, right, we're going to cut your loan short. You're going to come back and help out now. But it's worth reminding everybody that he was the mastermind with regards to those Bristol City and Reading wins. People might not realise that he was the man behind that.
He's back.
But he's back.
Craigie Gardner's back in town, and the Blues promotion bus is firing up.
This is it, yeah. Craig is firing it up with help of his brother, who is we'll call him his wingman, because that's where Karanka likes to play him. So.
Very clever, very clever.
But yeah, it was quite funny. Well, I was just looking at the article on the Blues website. It just, to me, it felt like overkill. You could just have a short paragraph on there saying that Craig Gardner has returned to the club after leaving Sheffield Wednesday. But instead, it was just fluffed up with all this, like, Karanka established a great understanding with Gardner. The Blues head coach is pleased to welcome him back. And
what are your views on it?
On the article or on him coming back?
On him coming back.
I've got no problem with it. I think we need somebody that... I think it's important that we have somebody in and around the team that knows the club and the majority of the players. I'm not a passion merchant, but we know he does. We know he will offer that. I think my understanding is that he gets on pretty well and has a great deal of respect with the majority of the players. He can be that conduit between the coaching staff and and the players, and even like between the players and some of the non-playing staff or the non-footballing staff, shall we say. So I've got no problem with it. You know, is it? I'm not saying it was the mastermind behind those wins, but you can't disprove it.
You did say it was.
Yeah, but you can't disprove it, can you? Try it. So, but I'm all right with it. I think, I've got to try and phrase this correctly because it could come out sounding all sorts of wrong. But at the moment, we've got what Spanish and Portuguese coaching staff, right? Obviously, Tony Roberts, goalkeeping coach, is Welsh. So,
as Welsh as you can get, sounding now.
Yes. It could be called Dafydd Roberts, could it?
Something. Ewan, yeah.
Yeah, Ewan. But I think it's important to have someone that is culturally more local, if that makes sense. So, and that's not taking anything away from, obviously, Karanka's lived here for a long time, and obviously his coaching staff have probably been in the country for a while as well. But I think it's important to have that. And as I say, I think the players, I know that Craig was known for sort of a bit of a laugh and a joke and being a bit of a prankster and stuff like that. I think, was it him that locked Ravel Morrison in, like, one of the training boxes or something?
Not sure if it was Morrison, but I remember it happening and getting pushed down the stairs. I thought it was one of the younger kids that they put in there. But
I'm not saying that he's going to start doing that now, but to have that sort of more jovial...
I think he's actually matured, maybe. From then, I think that's the sort of general consensus, that maybe he's matured since he's taken up that role. But like you, I'm not adverse to it. And if it might be a case of Karanka sort of thinking, well, he moved on and I haven't got that connection with the players, and then... worst, what can happen? It's like, it's not like we're in a great place anyway. So if it helps, you know.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, it can't make things any worse now, can it?
That's what I mean. So, we're in a shit place, so let's and, you know, try.
And it's probably a probably more of a cost effective appointment than maybe bringing in somebody else. That,
and it's a no brainer.
You beat me to it. I was going to drop it in at some point, but I'm not sure how much you would have learned away at Sheffield Wednesday for a few weeks. Let's just say the way these clubs are run, it just proves that the grass isn't always greener.
The paint hadn't even finished drying on his parking space, and he was on his way out the door.
No, poor Craig.
If you enjoy our podcasts, please don't forget to share it on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Let people know that you're enjoying it.
And also don't forget to rate and review us on all podcast platforms.
If they allow it.
If they allow it.
Cheers, guys.
So we are now joined by Daniel Ivory of the Almagir blog. It used to be often Partizan, as people probably would also know him by. If anyone follows Dan's work, you know he does an awful a lot of
you're gonna say awful then
awful. He's awful. He does an awful lot of really, really hard work to just shine a light on the club, the ownership, just to give fans an idea of just what is going on in the background. I'll be honest, I talk to Dan on a fairly regular basis and it confuses the hell out of me. Sometimes I find it really exhausting just reading some of the articles that he writes.
Snap.
So we've got him on today to talk about some of this stuff. Some of you guys have asked us, sent in some questions. Daniel's going to answer them, and then we'll get into a bit more nitty-gritty on it as well. And Daniel can tell us how we're going to save the club. No pressure, Daniel.
That's fine. No pressure.
Well, welcome back, Dan. How are you doing? Are you okay?
Oh, you know, different day, same crap. All that varies is the depth, especially with Blues. But everything's fine. Enjoying lockdown. Yeah, I quite like the peace and quiet. I quite like being alone at home, so it's all right. It's cool.
I bet it looks a bit like a sort of Walking Dead sort of zombie town up there at the moment, doesn't it?
I walked around town today, and it's a lot quieter than it has been, but It's not quite as zombie apocalypse as it was last March.
Is it not?
No.
Some of the scenes back then looked absolutely mental, considering it's a town centre. So, mate, we've got you on for a reason. There's the two big blogs that you've put out in the last couple of weeks that sort of shine a real light on what's going on. We've got some questions for you, but the first one, how do we get rid of TTA?
I knew you were going to ask it.
Because I told you I was going to ask you.
So, if you read the piece I wrote on Monday, you'd know that TTA aren't really the problem. TTA is the company that's owned by Paul Soon Cho Hong, who were the people who kind of rescued us from receivership. And they're not the biggest shareholders anymore. They've certainly not been the people putting money into the club for the last couple of years or the people making decisions. So although it's the St. Andrews Trillion Trophy Stadium, I never get that right, or the Trillion Trophy Training Ground, TTA are not the problem. The largest shareholder in the club is a Cambodian guy by the name of Vong Pik, but he's not all it seems either. He's a patsy, if you like Americanisms. He's a patsy for someone else.
What's a patsy?
What's a patsy? A front man.
A front man.
The elusive Mr. King, Wang Yaohui.
Let's play a couple of more of these questions.
Right, lads, good to have you all back. Question for you all. Do you think removing Dong fixes the issues that we have currently, or is it a case of wait until the ownership get bored of us and decide to move us on?
This is Gary from Northfield. I'm just wondering how Rendong is still in a job, basically, at Blues. I don't know if you know the answer to the question, but thank you very much. Cheers. Keep right on.
I think we all wonder that one.
They're both really good questions. Yeah, they are both really good questions. I know a lot of people are unhappy with Ren Xuandong. I'm one of them. He's a strange guy. Unlike you guys, I've met him, and he's very charismatic. His memory of Blues games is like incredible. The guy's got it all up top, and he's really charming. But we've seen what the mess of the last couple of years, and we've seen that, you know, he's the CEO. It's the book stops there. How's he still in the job? Well, it's circle of trust thing. So you imagine the guy who's putting money into the club, Wang Yaohui, the elusive Mr. King, he's elusive for a reason. He's not being the best behaved boy, as it were. And so you want people who you can trust who are not going to ask difficult questions about things. And Dong's one of those people. And as ineffective as he is, as bad decisions he's made, I can't see him being got rid of. The closest he went to going was when Cottrell went, because they actually did kind of like say to Dong, look, mate, thanks, but like, no thanks. But because the other two guys, Edward Jenganan and Shane Wang Yao, couldn't negotiate a contract, Dong had to come back. But like, he's the symptom of the problem. Getting rid of Dong, I don't think achieves anything. He's there because of the ownership thing. And until the ownership thing changes, we'll just be stuck with some other no mark who doesn't like asking difficult questions.
Is there a case that Dong actually might know too much about King, that there's potential there that King doesn't want to, you know, get rid of him, or they don't want to try and get rid of him because, you know, at any point, and we know that Dong can be quite loose-lipped with stuff, he could end up blabbing about some of King's bigger secrets? Or do you think it's just it's not really like that?
Part of me thinks it's amazing that Dong has not blabbed any of King's bigger secrets. People talk about leaks at the club. My personal opinion, these leak at Blues is Dong, because he can't keep his mouth shut.
Yep.
But he's never really said anything about King, which says to me, either A, he doesn't know a lot, which I don't believe, or B,
or he's too scared.
Sufficiently scared not to. And yeah. I think even firing him, like if they fired him, I don't think he'd say much. I think he'd be too scared of like, disappearing maybe. But he's not in the job because he knows too much and he'd blab it. He's in the job because he knows too much. And he knows not to ask questions. It's like I say, it's the trust thing. trust is a really, really big thing out there.
Obviously, with the stuff that, that came out about Dong, I think you put it out late last year, about the, is it essentially a super CCJ thing?
Yeah.
Do you think that that could be a part of it as well, that he's been given a role where he can go and live a life?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, so for those who didn't read it, Dong has got a number of court orders against him in China. It's a large number. And they're not like CCJs, like he just owes money. They're CCJs in that he's not allowed to fly in a plane. He's not allowed to go but anything but the most basic transport. He's not allowed to buy fancy things, put his kids in fancy schools. Basically, the whole idea is that you owe money, and until you pay that money back, you have to live a very basic life. Because Dong doesn't live in China, they can't enforce it. But because China is very much a mass surveillance state, the minute he lands in China, they've got him. So yeah, he can't really go back. His kids live in Spain at the moment, I think, with his parents. So, like, yeah, it's important for Dong to hold on to the job as well, because if he doesn't have a job with Blues, I'm not sure he'd have a visa, and then he can't live in England anymore. So, yeah.
So I was sort of saying then, could that be that it's a favour from a friend almost, that I'll give you this job so that you can go and live a lavish lifestyle or a decent lifestyle. And it's lavish, isn't it? let's be honest, that's what they're doing.
It's possible. I don't think they were too impressed with just how lavish it was. So I think that's been failed just a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's possible. It's possible. Dong certainly is connected to King's family in London, because there was that rumour going around a while back that King's missus wasn't happy with Dong. So there's certainly a connection there.
Next question.
Hi, guys. It's Dave in Birmingham. Is it a case that the cleanest way for anyone to buy the club would be for the club to go into administration? I assume a buyer would only then be dealing with the administrators and no one else. Seems a bit drastic, but is that the only way? Gossip-wise, in the papers, there's been no one that's sort of come across as being interested in buying the club publicly. Be interested to know whether there has been any interest that he's heard of, maybe from Middle East or America, or whether simply people are put off by the way the structure is, that, you know, it looks quite convoluted. Probably looks like a quite difficult, purchase. If anyone was interested. Good luck with the show. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Okay, so first of all, yes, there's always interest in from people to buy football clubs, including Birmingham City, always. The big problem is always price. Most people who are looking to buy a football club are looking to buy it so they can do it up and flip it on. That was certainly the case. Do you remember back when Ernst & Young put the club up for sale?
Yep.
And there were bidders, and most of them were those kind of like tie kicker kind of wannabe, kind of wanna buyers, who were putting in a low ball offer with the idea that they would, you know, get rid of the deadwood and make the club saleable and sell it on. It is not as easy as many think it is. So there is an element that a lot of people are scared away, because I've met people, I in the past have met people who are interested. And to be honest with you, if someone is interested in buying the club, wants to meet me, they're not the kind of people you want to buy the club, because I'm a no one. You shouldn't be talking to me about it. But I spoke to people, and like they've got no idea. Like they think, you know, you can just like get in touch with Dong, say, look, I've got 40 million, I want to buy the club, and Dong will say, well, no, I want this, and they have been in negotiation, it's done. It's convoluted. It's really convoluted, and it is a problem because the way that the club's entwined with the stock exchange list and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it probably does put people off. It probably puts off the more high range bidders that people want. You know, your American billionaires, your oil shakes, that sort of thing. But people talking about admin as a clearer way to buy it. Yes, it is, but it's not going to happen. Administration happens when someone who's owed a load of money says you can't pay it, so your company's going like out of the question. The people Birmingham City owe money to are the owners to Birmingham Sports Holdings. And if Birmingham Sports Holdings puts Birmingham City into administration, that ends their listing. So they're not going to do it. Administration is not going to happen. It's the last thing they want to happen.
Is there ever a chance that they may put a new business, which I know that they've sort of put the property businesses into the same listing, and that's sufficient enough to keep the listing going to then close the club down and basically just leave it?
It's certainly the case that they're trying to diversifying business that Birmingham Sports Holding does. You've got the One Park thing in Cambodia. You've got a lottery company in China. There's a medical company in Japan that I've not touched yet, but I've got loads of details about and I need to do about in the future. But is there the will to sell the club? I don't think so. And unless they want to sell it, they can say whatever price they want. And again, it comes back to that question, doesn't it? How much people want to pay for it? If they're able to sell the club, but they put a massive price, well, no one's going to buy it anyway. So it's kind of like, it's a really, really nuanced, tricky thing to talk about, I think.
So yeah, the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, the listing, etc. Obviously, you said that Vong is Pick, is it? It's spelt Peck, but it's pronounced Pick, is it? You'd be the man name pronunciations, as we know. So, what the situation there? Obviously, he's owns what is it? Nearly 30% now, or 29.something%? Is that right, or is it a bit more than that?
Of the club, directly and indirectly, about 42%.
42%.
So he's quite significantly the largest shareholder in the club.
So if anyone did want to buy the club, which, it, as you've already said, it's a bit of a convoluted process. How difficult would it be if somebody actually did want to stump up what they want? How straightforward would it be for them to be able to do that? Is it just a case of buying the majority of those shares in the parent company, or can you break that down a little bit for us?
I think the only way to do it would be to buy shares in the parent company, which owns 75% of the club. So you go to, you'd have to make an offer to own. If you own over 30% of shares on the Stock Exchange of Hong Kong, you have to make what's called a general offer, which is where you have to offer the same price to everyone for it. The problem is that so public shares, like shares not controlled by major shareholders, is like 25%. And you've got what's also called a public float. So you're not allowed to have, I think it's less than 20% that aren't in general public hands, because otherwise you get a situation where you've got most shares in like three or four people's hands, and someone buys a share and the price shoots up or shoots down, makes it too volatile. It's called a concentration. And that's against the rules of the stock exchange. So to purchase the holding company, you basically have to go to one of the big people, and say, I want to buy all your shares. And are they going to say yes, unless you offer them a massive premium? And it's going to be expensive, because the market cap, stock market capitalization is the number of shares multiplied by the price of the share. So at the moment, that's about $260 million for the whole company. So say you're buying someone out who owns 25%, that's going to cost you 60-something million quid for less than a quarter of the club. It's not worth it, is it? It's ridiculously not worth it.
Is there also the possibility that if someone was to buy into the parent company, that then if there are some dodgy dealings going on, that they potentially lose their investment as well?
Well, yeah, I would think so. I mean, I'll tell you a story. Back in 2013, the first time I went to Hong Kong, I went with Matthew, and we met a guy out there in the Ibis Hotel called Lu Xing Cheng, who was the second largest shareholder at the time. Do you remember meeting him, Matthew?
Yeah, I've still got pictures of him on my Dropbox.
Yeah. Matthew will tell you, it was a really surreal thing, because we ended up in a meeting in a solicitor's office with this guy, Lu Xing Cheng, and Sammy Yu was there and a couple other people. And they were talking about wresting the control of the club out of Carson's hands. And the upshot of that meeting, they asked me to be an independent non-executive director of the whole company. And I was like, hell no. For the simple reason, I knew that if they made me that and there were problems, it was me who was going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same. Like if anyone from the outside bought into Birmingham Sports Holdings and there's dodgy stuff coming on, even if they weren't involved in it, they're going to get tarred with it.
Yeah.
So it's it's a mess. You know, you don't want to be in that situation.
You're sort of guilty by association.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it took so long for the receivership to be sorted out, because when Paulson came in, the company was in an absolute state, and you had the receivers were fighting Carson, who was still trying to take control of the company from prison, you know, by doing everything he could to stop the receivers acting in court.
Yeah.
You don't want to be involved in it. It's just not worth it. It's not worth the hassle.
So the club at the moment is in debt to around 100, 110 million pounds to it's technically the parent, parts of the parent company, the some of the groups that have obviously pumped money into us. What I mean is, I'm trying to phrase this correctly, is that this could potentially go tits up at any given moment, I'm guessing, based on the fact that we owe this amount. If someone pulls the plug, you know, the club just doesn't have that money. So, I mean, can you add anything else to that situation, the debt that the club is in?
So the club owes, according to the last announcement I've seen, 110 million, which is now split between Birmingham Sports Holdings and Oriental Rainbow Investments, who bought a partial share in the club. When they bought the stake in the club, they also bought a stake in the debt. Now, if you look at what happened at Wigan, Wigan were owned by a Hong Kong listed company who sold it to a connected company in, I think it's British Virgin Islands or the Cayman Islands, one of the two. And the second the non-listed company owned it, there was like, we're not putting any money in, we want our loan back. And like that, club's in the admin, club's gone. And this is the situation Blues finds themselves in that at the moment we are pretty safe, you know, like the last interim results are apparently profit because of the Jude Bellingham sale. You know, the money's not great, but it's ticking over. The club's ticking over. Everything's okay. But that's as long as there's money regularly being infused from BSH or from ORI or from whoever. If that money stops, we are screwed. And people say, oh, you know, well, what will make it stop? Well, he could lose interest. He could run out of money because money's a finite resource. Or we could go through the Carson situation again, which was not great. And something like that happens and taps turned off.
Yeah, it's like you said before, people say it's all well and good looking at it and saying it's fine at the moment and you could be in a worse position, but you could be in a worse position at any point anyway. So.
And it doesn't help that, you know, we're not going to churn out a Jude Bellingham every season, and we're going to be going the best part of, well, probably over a year now with no gate receipts and stuff like that. So even that money that was coming in directly for us is not there. So there's just a real, real lack of income that we're completely reliant on pretty much this money that's coming from those guys at the moment.
It's not just gate receipts either. Like Birmingham's St Andrews was a 7-day-a-week stadium. So every day of the week, there would be events and meetings and conferences. Like they'd hire out the boxes and things, weddings even.
Yeah.
You know, that all brings in money to the club. And I've got a lot of respect for the commercial department for doing that sort of thing. You know, like the football tickets are like one source of income, but this is like the cherry on top. This is like extra additional revenue, and it's what you want.
Yeah.
But with COVID and now the stands not being in use,
but they can hold those events in the car park, can't they?
They can't have any baptisms in the Tilton anymore, though.
Bless him.
should we get some more questions?
Yes, yeah, go for it.
Hi, I'm Joe. I love the podcast. My question is, what do you think is the biggest problem with the ownership at the minute? And what do you think is the best way to correct it? Rather than just saying, you know, Dong out, TTA out, where do you think they can go to improve the situation at Blues at the minute? Thanks.
Okay, so yesterday being Tuesday, I wrote about 1600 words on the Medium website, which I use for writing meta things, but basically answering this question, because I get asked a lot, what can we do? What can we do to sort out the ownership? Because that is the biggest problem at the club. And the pre-see of what I wrote, you can read it at almagir.medium.com, was that as individuals, we have no power over the club. So to have power, we need to get the regulatory bodies who have power to do their job. And to do that, we need to find out what the club or the holding company are doing wrong, tell the regulatory bodies that they're doing it wrong, and make them apply their rules. So, for instance, if it's the stock exchange and the holding company, picking up on errors that the holding company have made, writing to the stock exchange and saying very specifically, this stock, this problem, this issue, this rule. If you remember last year with 1875, we actually did this.
Yep.
And it worked. It worked. And I keep my eyes out for stuff. And if there's something where I think people again could get involved, I would do that. I'd set up a template email, send this email to this address, put these details in. It's the only way.
Yeah.
It's just, I would go as well that the EFL are probably another one to look at. The EFL are pretty useless. I'm not shy about saying that. But they need to start enforcing what their rules are. I sent the details I had about Dong to them. I sent the details I had about King to them. I just got fobbed off. But if enough people keep doing it and keep sending them enough things, there will come a point where they cannot fob us off anymore. People have also suggested going to like government, going to MPs and things like that. There are MPs who are involved in football finance. But again, it's about being specific. You've got to give specific reasons, specific things they've done wrong, and then the rules can be enforced and change can happen.
Talking about the EFL, do you think that there's a chance that the EFL will say, it's been done, we're not going to look at it? They passed the fit and proper ownership test at the point, and the parent company and whatever is nothing to do with us, and sort of sweep it under the carpet because they've messed up?
It's possible. If you look at what happened when Carson was arrested, they tried very hard not to get involved in that. But the fit and proper test is not, shouldn't be seen as a one-off, like you pass the test, that's it. It's a continuing qualification. So if you have a disqualifying condition, i.e. you get arrested for money laundering and get convicted, then you have to be disqualified.
Do you think their hands are a bit tied? If something happens at that point, have they got many options then? Would it be a case of you get rid of that person or you're out the league?
I think with the changes that have happened since Sean Harvey went, it might be a case of you get rid of that person or you're out the league. The new guy who's in charge is a guy called Trevor Birch. Now, I know Trevor Birch has been a administrator at football clubs before.
He was involved with Portsmouth and Villa, wasn't he, when they were in a bit of financial trouble, yeah, if I remember correctly.
Do you remember when we had that frou-frou with the EFL over the embargo thing?
Yes. So yes.
The person that Birmingham City wanted to appoint for the hearing was Trevor Birch. I've got every confidence that Trevor Birch is going to be far better than his predecessors like Sean Harvey. And it might be that having someone of Trevor Birch's standing there, that the EFL will get tighter. I don't think it's coincidental that as soon as he's appointed, the EFL writes all chairman and say, look, you've got to stop footballers messing around because we're gonna get shut down. Like the first thing he did was wrote the letter, was harsh, was to the point, and we've got to see more of this. Maybe there's hope for the future.
Fingers crossed. All right, let's hear another one.
Hi, guys. AJ here. Just wondered if there was any inkling that the Hong Kong Stock Exchange don't like any of these deals or whether they just think everything's above board.
There is an inkling that Birmingham Sports Holdings are being watched by the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. They've been watched for a while, I think. When Paul Soon got the shares relisted, there were certain things, strictures that were put upon him for the company to achieve in a period of time, which weren't done. I don't think the stock exchange are too impressed with the amount of money wasted, the amount of losses made. So yeah, they're watching it. Whether they'll do anything or not is a different matter. They don't tend to start asking really difficult questions until trading in shares is suspended. So for example, back when Panu had a drunken rant on OP and I reported him for it and they suspended the shares, that's when they got really like started asking questions. And when they got answers, they asked questions about those answers. And the more that, you know, that it unraveled, the harder they pulled the string, as it were. So yeah, they're watching, but they won't do anything until something happens, and then they'll be on it like a ton of bricks.
As some form of slip up.
Yeah, some form of slip up. That'll do it. You know, it's just the way it is, you know. And to be honest, you look at the stock exchange of Hong Kong, you look at other deals, it's a nightmare. It's absolutely rife over there. There's a guy called David Webb who runs a website called webb-site.com. And he has uncovered some shit. You think what I've done is complicated? You should see some of the shit he's uncovered, because he blows my mind.
Was that the one that you sent the other day where it's literally a net, just a massive web?
Yeah.
A massive web.
Massive web.
Yeah.
Not on the website by David Webb.
Yeah. 50 companies that were interconnected. And it basically, he's an investor, and he exposed them as, do not invest in these companies because they're all interconnected. And it all fell apart because he exposed it. That was a couple of years ago. But like you said, the diagram was like, wow.
Is he like you on steroids, Dan?
Yeah, I can't. He works like 16 hours a day doing this stuff. I don't know how he does it.
Is that all?
Mate.
A bit half-assed, isn't it?
He's incredible. I mean, I think he must be somewhat autistic or something like that, because the level of detail is incredible. He's actually recovering from cancer. He kind of took a little bit of time off, but he's coming back into it now. And he's a multimillionaire as well, because he knows what he's talking about and he's invested in the right things. So I read a lot of what he does and follow a lot of the work he does, because it's useful. He has like the facts at his fingertips.
Okay. I'll get some tips from him if he's that clever with it.
Why don't you ask to design his website for him?
His website.
His website, yeah.
His website called website.
Yeah, it's the most basic website you've ever seen. It's like,
there you go, Chris.
I like not changed. I might give him a shout.
Tap him up, mate.
Yeah. Right, one more.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how absolutely bollocks are we?
I think that's a great question to finish on as well.
It is, because it's a really difficult one at the moment. I'd say we're not that much more bollocks than other clubs in the Championship, really. I mean, like Sheffield Wednesday, look at them. They're not paying their players on time. They're not paying their staff on time. They got deducted points this season. Their sponsorships are a mess. They've been through two managers. So I think relatively we're probably about a 4 or 5. But it's like we said earlier, one thing happens and we're in the 11. You know, and we don't know when that thing is going to happen, if it's going to happen. So, you know, it's always on the edge. You know, it wouldn't be Blues any other way.
What you're saying is that there's every chance, you know, that at this point in time, a lot of clubs are in a, I won't say a fairly similar position, but, you know, no club's really making any money. But then you've got those ones that end up a lot like, you know, Portsmouth did a few years ago, or Wigan last season, for example. I mean, what is the reality of that? I know you mentioned it in your article earlier in the week, but that's quite a terrifying experience, I think. I mean, how close to falling down that hole could we end up?
I think we're closer to it than we've been before. I think the OR ideal has pushed us a little bit closer to the edge. I think it was a great deal for BSH. It was a great deal for ORI, and absolutely awful for Blues. There is, you know, ORI could put money into the club, but so again, to like, if you're not aware, there are two ways you can put money into a business. You either lend it money, which is debt, or you're investing it by creating new shares, equity. They're not going to create new shares. So it's all going to be debt. So you imagine you've got a British Virgin Islands company, which is a shell, and you don't know where that money's coming from, coming in. And like, we don't know how much is coming in, just like we don't from BSH. And then they decide, well, we haven't got any more money, we'd like it back. There are similarities to, you know, the Carson thing as well. Like when Carson owned Blues, money came into the club from, I don't want to know where. It came up in court, like 15 million. They don't know where it came from. And there was no loan agreement. Carson was like, yeah, here's some money. Like my mates put it in, pay us it back when you've got it, you know?
No
pay
receipts. Me back when you've
got it. No receipts, no paperwork, nothing.
Under the mattress, though, cash.
Yeah, maybe cash that's been picked up from a laundrette or something. I don't know. but it's hard, isn't it? Because what do fans want? Fans want us to spend money. They want us to buy players. They want us to spend dollar on players. You know, it's like transfers. We signed 12 people in the summer, but people want us to sign more now because we're crap.
Yeah,
and. I don't know. I get it. I understand why people feel like that. I really do. But in the real world, it doesn't work, you know, and it's shit.
I just see it as this might be completely wrong, but I just see the whole thing as almost like a ruler just balancing right in the middle, and it could just go either way with it implodes or, you know, all suddenly it works out and it's excellent and,
I think it's more likely to implode than all suddenly to work out and be excellent, but I wouldn't rule that out because stranger things have happened. It might be we go on a 23-match unbeaten run and we get into the playoffs or whatever, storm the playoffs and get promoted. Because if we get promoted, it's a whole other gravy. And I really don't know what would happen then.
No, it's
a good point, actually. So, you know, I think people have already tried to touch on this, but, you know, what happens if we do go to the Premier League? What happens if things do turn out for the best? Because whenever we look at this stuff, it does always seem like quite scary and quite a troublesome, tumultuous sort of situation. Okay, what happens if, you know, we do get promoted or, you know, they do turn things around and the debt's paid off or, you know, I'm sure there's still going to be some concern around it, but I'd be interested to know your thoughts if things actually started to improve and what that would mean for, you know, the club and the people involved.
Well, it depends what you mean by start to improve. I think the first place that things would need to start improving is on the pitch. If things improved on the pitch, then the club's more successful, which would attract more. Excuse me, would attract more commercial and sponsorship propositions. We get promoted, then we get a whole different range of like that kind of stuff. I think the listing price would go up a bit. I don't think it'd go up as much as some people think, but it'd go up a bit. But I'm concerned in that everyone thinks that the Premier League is the promised land, right? And they think that, you know, you get to the Premier League, you get all the money and everything's okay. But I don't believe that's necessarily the case. I'm looking at West Bromwich Albion at the moment. So they went up. They spent a bit of money in the summer, but not much. And now they're boned. You know, they're not going anywhere. They're probably going to come back down. And all that promised money is not going to materialise. So, you know, it's not just about getting promoted. There's steps after that. It's about being secure. Like, I hate to mention them, but the mob across the expressway, whose name must not be said out loud, are probably a good example of what happens if you do things right. They got, you know, by the skin of their teeth, they got promoted. By the skin of their teeth, they've stayed up.
Yep.
But they've successful in successive seasons, as painful as it is, they've started to improve their recruitment. Their academy has improved massively because they've stolen from West Bromwich Albion, from us, like the best staff. You know, their owners have made correct decisions in that, not just to invest in like players, because you can spend 100 million on players, but you still only might stay up because the VAR was switched off at one game.
It wasn't even switched off. It was just ignored, wasn't it?
Well, his watch, didn't go off, did it, or something?
Yeah, his goal line technology didn't go off. So, you know, you can spend 100 million and still stay up on a freak happenstance.
Yep.
But you invest in the future, you invest in infrastructure, then you've got more chance of making it like for a longer period of time. And that's what they've been doing. And it really hurts me because this is what we should have been doing and we're dismantling instead.
Yeah.
You know, we're not thinking long term. And yes, it's going to be a long time before they get all the money back. The return on investment is not going to be great, but you play the long game and things work out. I think like Wolves are a really good example. Fosun got it really wrong at first, really, really wrong, and they were really bad. And then they brought in Nuno Espirito Santo, the whole Mendes thing, and all of a sudden their circumstances, you know, it changed. And there's still a stepping stone club for, you know, for players. You know, you look at Jota, who went to Liverpool for 45 million. You look at the players they brought in. They're bringing in young, skillful-looking Portuguese, Hispanic players, and they're looking to sell them on. That's what the, you know, it is a, but there is a strategy in place, and in doing so, that they've moved the quality of player that they're bringing in up a notch each year.
Yep.
And strategy, it'll never catch on.
Strategy, yeah.
Yeah, it's long-term thinking, and it's. You know, I thought at Blues we'd finally take notice of this with this 3-year plan and all that crap. But it's just words. It's just words.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I could be more positive, but I don't feel it.
I don't think a lot of people do at the moment. Dan, thanks very much for joining us, mate. And it's been really informative. I read the piece that you put together the other night about if people want to get involved and do something and then how they can. I assume that we can share a link to that.
Yeah, it's on almagier.medium.com. I'm going to write a follow-up piece to it because of the conversation I had last night, which is going to look at how to find things.
Okay. That's a brilliant for anyone that is wanting to get involved to just apply some pressure, I suppose, and to sort of say we're not just going to let things carry on. That's a great the document that you've written, it's extensive, it's quite long, but if you want to do something, if you want to make a difference in a way, it's a great piece to get started and to just the advice of where to sort of go.
That was what I was trying to do. That was all I tried to do, was to give people an idea of how they could get started and give them some encouragement that they could.
It definitely does that, and it's a great read. Right, before we go, mate, what's your prediction for Middlesbrough? Because obviously, ultimately, it's a football podcast.
And my prediction is that I turn off the TV after 35 minutes.
You're not going to predict a score? Go on.
I don't like predicting us to lose, but I can't see us winning. 2-0 to them.
Okay. Cheers for joining us, mate. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Thanks, Dan.
No worries. Cheers.
Exhausted after that, mate?
Very tired. It was almost like reading one of his articles. It took us about as long as well, to be fair.
In a good way. In a good way.
That wasn't a negative comment. No, there's enough negativity around the club at the moment. I didn't mean it in that sense. Yeah.
No.
It's just a lot to take in, isn't it? And I think it's quite
very difficult for small minds like ours to take everything in.
Yes, tiny minds. I think just for him to break it down, because like sometimes you can read things and you can read it so many times, it just doesn't go in, doesn't really make sense. But hopefully that's helped a few people understand a little bit more about the situation and, you know, just...
It's never going to be something that's easy to understand, but hopefully that's made it a little bit easier for people. Hopefully.
You'd like to think so.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
So, we've just got Dan's prediction for Middlesbrough. Should we take have a little preview of the game? Take a little look forward?
Yes.
Team news?
Well, it's still early in the week, isn't it? So, you'd have to assume that the people that were available on Sunday are going to be available for this game. I don't know if Halal... Halalovic is back.
I'm just gonna stick with Halalovic because it's easy. And the commentator called him that the other week, so fuck it.
He also, yes, he did. Yeah. If he is back, who else are we missing at the weekend? We're missing one other, but Gary Gardner, the winger, was also was also missing. So, yeah, and of course, you know, anything could happen between now and Saturday in terms of players in or out. Probably out. Actually, it might be worth touching on a few of the bits we saw over the weekend in terms of. There was this article, well, it wasn't an article, it's Alan Nixon was talking about Josh Cogley potentially going to Salford on loan. You also mentioned something about Connor Wickham. Blues being interested in bringing Connor Wickham in. I think we've shown a little bit of interest in him during the summertime as well.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised.
I'd like to think we may be looking for someone a little bit younger and a little bit more mobile. Mm-hmm. I could see Wickham working. But again, it's another person that has his injury problems, and we seem to have picked up quite a few of those. We've already said about it before. We need players out the door. You're going to end up with potentially Davis, Crowley, McEachran, maybe Seddon and Truman, potentially. I don't know.
Truman came certainly back and it was meant to be for the season, wasn't it, that he was out for? And came back in for whatever reason.
I mean, he's playing regularly, so your assumption has got to be we've brought him back to
make a sale,
to sell him, because there'd be no point taking him back. He's not going to get in the team. He's not going to make a difference to, you know, the bench. So it, for me, we've either brought him back to loan him out at a higher level, which I don't think is going to happen, because, you know, they went down to League One anyway. He's not going to get a loan to the Championship, or we're going to have to sell him to a League One team. And let's be honest, there's not a lot of money about at the moment. So whatever we sell any of these players for, we're not going to get a lot of money.
No.
And potentially we could see a lot of these players go for free. Certainly Davis, I think, could go for free. I think McEachran could go for free. I even think Crowley could probably go for free or a loan to the end of the season. We don't get anything for him.
A few things coming out today with Crowley saying that there's a loan lined up to, was it Hull? And then someone suggested that there was Stoke as well. But
yeah, I mean, I saw people talk about that on message boards, but then I've sort of looked on Twitter and I've found no legitimate news source for that. It just seemed to come from one random Hull City account. I mean, there could well be something in it. People do find this stuff out, but I've not seen anyone else pick it up yet. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, because obviously I think Daniel mentioned in his piece recently that we've got 27 players, I think. So, I mean, I think we're allowed a squad of 25.
Yeah, it's 25.
Or allowed squad, registered. Yeah, registered players.
Not including under 21s?
Not including under 21s, yeah. So they're going to have to move a number of players out if they want to register some new players into the squad, I think. So, and I think they need to free up the wages and stuff.
Well, I'd completely forgot that Davis had even been in a match day squad, but you sort of said that
he was on the bench against Bournemouth. Yeah, he didn't come on. Not that he would have made much of a difference, but yeah,
I completely forgot about that.
And yeah, and that was the only squad he's featured in.
McEachran's had a few of 19th man, has he been?
Yep,
a few times.
But I think I have a feeling he's going to be on his bike now as well. So they've got to make room in the squad. They've got to make room, because it's becoming a little bit overgrown and lopsided, I think, maybe. So yeah, or just a little bit unbalanced.
Obviously, see what happens going forward as well, whether there could always be bids for other players, but to make any moves ourselves, we've got to thin that squad out, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is if we're going to make any money in this window, which may or may not be the aim, that would mean selling, if you want to call them at the moment an asset, then, you know, they're an asset of some form, but there's only really two or three players that you'd probably say would actually get any decent money for.
They've said the other way, unless they're performing, there's not going to be many teams that will want to take them, and to pay a premium for them, is there? If you've got a player who's playing well, teams want them. If not, they might take them if they've shown form in the past, but they won't pay full price for them. So see what happens there.
So we were going to talk about Borough, weren't we? And I sidetracked us in true Waffley Matthew style. It happened. So team news for Borough. Don't have any because it's Wednesday. Is it, what day is it?
Wednesday,
yeah. I knew it had a Y in it, but I couldn't remember.
It's got day at the end.
It's got day at the end, yeah. So no team news yet as far as I'm aware. I haven't seen anything. I think press conference will be tomorrow. Your guess is as good as mine. What's he going to line it up as?
I mean, for Warnock or for Karanka? Because I think Karanka's team, you could probably, like, I think we're at the stage now where it's bingo balls, and you could literally, you'd have more chance of predicting the team if you did that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
We started looking like we had a settled system, but not with a settled team.
I don't know.
Well,
we've touched on it already, but does he go a little bit more defensive? A little bit more defensive? What? How can you do that? Because of recent results, does he look at how they performed as like a 5-4-1 against Man City? And say, well, actually, that kind of worked against them to a point. I say worked, but we performed better. Does he go like that? Or does he stick with a 4-2-3-1? Does he go does he do like a 5-3-2? You know, your guess is as good as mine.
I reckon that we might see the return of Duke from the start.
I think potentially that could happen.
Not based on the whole Hogan thing at halftime, because
not based on daft internet rumours.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say we've sort of inquired a few places and we've had absolutely nothing that backs that up, that happened. So the rumour was that at halftime Scott Hogan refused to play the second half, and that they had
you
words.
You could argue you never really played the first half, though, couldn't you, to be honest?
Okay, to go out onto the pitch for the second half.
I mean...
But we've heard nothing that backs that up. In fact, we've heard the opposite, that it didn't happen. Not gospel, but we have heard that. But I actually think that we'll see the return of Duke more for the set pieces again. The Warnock side, as we've seen in the past... He likes to use Duke as someone who can defend set pieces, corners, free kicks. So I think I think we're going to see him back in there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you probably will do. And to be fair, Hogan really struggled on Sunday as well, and his body language did look a little bit, you know, just almost like he wasn't interested. But you know, if you're only going to touch the ball once every, you know, 19 minutes or something like that, then you know, you're trying to make your runs and you're not getting picked up, and you know, or you can't get out of your own half, you are going to get frustrated. And you can't expect him to be coming back and trying to win the ball back in his own half, because then when we do eventually win the ball back, there's nobody further forward anyway. Like, you can't have it both ways. So does he need to improve and to find his form again? Yes, he does, but we have to create chances for him as well.
Well, I think that's the key point. I feel a bit sorry for him because people slating him for his performances, but his best football has been when we've been attacking teams, linking up with Tarao and him feeding him through. That's the best sort of moments that he's had. Yeah, he's missed a few chances, but that's his game, isn't it? It's getting in and getting
chances.
We
need to create the chances, and eventually you will score one. You know, and if he gets a couple of goals back-to-back, it all changes. And the problem we have with Duke, and we spoke about it before, that they say he doesn't fit the system, and you know, that might be so, but you know, tweak the system so it does work. You know, put crosses into the box, give him give him fuel to feed off of. You know, it's
my thing with with Duke playing as a lone striker is that there's no foil for him. If he's the lone striker, if you can put 100 crosses into the box, and he's going to be fighting two defenders at a time.
You need to get someone close to him, don't you? Yeah. So that's when you have your sort of your number 10 that almost is a 9.5 because maybe that's McGree. Probably less so Halilovic. But you know, you want to have those people that are going to get close to him and run beyond him as well. You know, and you want to try and pepper the box with crosses as we can. Sometimes I don't feel like we're really a crossing side, and I don't think it helps that, you know, we've got
inverted wingers.
Yeah. And you know, that's.
I knew what you were going to say then, because I thought the same thing myself. That if you.
Yeah, but I also
if
don't
you have
like,
to cut back every time to put a cross in, then you're slowing the game down and you're letting the defenders get back in there, aren't you?
That's where we need to be more progressive in our style of play. And, you know, if they are going to invert, then that's when your fullbacks have absolutely got to get on the outside and overlap and get the cross in. Arguably, like, Colin and Friend have got quite a good delivery from out wide.
Have you noticed something, though, that when they do overlap, that we seem to be too far down the field? It's you want them sort of having the overlap around in line with the 18-yard box, but they're actually like 5 yards inside the 18-yard box.
Yeah, it's almost like there's
a lack of space then in behind.
Yeah, I don't really get that. I know what you're saying. It's a strange one. Then alternatively, if you've got inverted wingers, if you want them to sort of cut inside and have a shot, or you can even use the fullback as like a dummy, run and take a defender away with them. You know, Sanchez and Bella both have the ability to, you know, get a shot off, and you know that's when if you take shots at goal, you know, doesn't necessarily have to go in, but if you cause a goalkeeper to make a save, he can spill it or push it out from some of our players. You know, you've got that opportunity. One thing I was going to say is I would be interested to see if we would potentially play Lico as not necessarily the 10, but you know, someone that can get close to Duke as well. I actually thought he played pretty well as a striker for that. What he's on for 25 minutes in the second half or something like that, potentially. Yeah. Thought he looked quite good and made some good runs, and maybe, you know, I think he lacks a little bit of composure in that final third, but he is going to cause defenders problems with his ability, his pace is going to scare people. I wouldn't be surprised to see him feature up front in one of the next couple of games. Does he start against Middlesbrough? As you said, because of the defensive responsibilities of Duke, probably not, but we maybe see him against Preston. I think if I remember rightly, he had quite a good game against Preston away when we beat them. Did we actually play Duke and Lico up front together that game? They definitely both played together.
No, we'd gone five at the back, wasn't it, on that one? Was it 5-3-2?
I remember it was Lico and Duke up front, was it? And then
McGree.
And then whoever was behind them.
Yeah.
Son Yitch and somebody.
Yeah.
San Jose, I think, actually, it might have been.
No, yeah, it was, because he pinged that absolutely mental ball out to the corner flag.
Yeah.
Sure, that was the one, wasn't it? That was QPR.
That was a great ball by Josh Cogley for the goal as well, wasn't it? When he put Lico through from, yeah. Reminiscent of the good times, Chris. Yeah, you know?
If you remember, when we won a game.
Another Craig Gardner masterclass. People might dispute it, but they can't disprove it. we could talk about, you know, what he's going to line up with all day. And let's be honest, I don't think either of us really, really know. I'm not sure what that back four is going to look like. Is Harley Dean out of the side? Is he out of favour? Was he just been given a rest? Is it time to play Roberts and JCS? Is it time to play Dean and JCS?
Like like we said, it's one of them where until 2 o'clock. No, not 2 o'clock. Half past.
It'd be 11:30, won't it?
11, yeah, is it half past 12:30?
I think it's a 12:30 kickoff. Yeah, I'll have to double check that. Yeah. But I think it's lunchtime.
Yeah, until an hour before kickoff. I don't think anyone's going to know, apart from Karanka and the players. So, prediction on something that we've got no idea about.
It's the revenge game. It's the George Friend and Adam Clayton revenge game. Not that George Friend seems like he would get revenge on anybody. And also, I think Adam Clayton's still carrying a knock, by the way, so I'm not quite sure why he's still been involved recently.
Because he loves him.
He's a leader.
It's his... Maybe he's, it's his son.
Maybe it's his son. I am going to sound crazy here.
3-0. 3-0 Blues.
0-0. I was going to say 1-0 to Blues, but actually I'm starting to think...
You felt a bit carried away then? And
yeah, I just sort of... Oof, don't just nosebleed territory. No, I think probably 0-0. I think there's going to be... I feel like they're going to get their defensive shape, organisation back into gear. Just pick up a couple of points over the next couple of games, or I'll be happy with that. Just stop that rot in the league. I'm going 0-0.
And I'm going 3-0 Blues.
One day you will get it right.
Everyone enjoy the game at the weekend.
Or try at least.
Or just don't watch it.
Yeah. Just enjoy your weekend, everybody, by not watching Blues.
Enjoy your weekend however you wish to spend it. Enjoy it. And until next week, keep right on.
Keep right on.